Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, radio manager at the Recording Library of West Texas. You may have noticed lately our newspaper program has been shortened to an hour, and we have a lack of Odessa American news articles. On Monday, April 17th, Odessa American subscribers were informed the OA was no longer going to provide daily e-editions on their website of the newspaper. The message indicated they would provide the e-edition a few days a week, but did not include details as to what those days will be. A few years ago, the Odessa American reduced the number of days a week it was going to publish actual printed papers. We're trying to use their website to find timely local articles, but those are also limited. We have attempted to contact the Odessa American to find out what days they will publish the e-edition and if there's a way to continue getting daily news articles from the paper, but they have not returned our phone calls and emails. Please bear with us as we continue to try to access and bring you timely news articles from the Odessa American. Some days, this newspaper program may run the full 90 minutes, while other days, we may only have enough content for 60 minutes or less. Thank you for your patience.
Animal Services Limits Dog Intake by Mercedes Cordero. The City of Midland Animal Services will limit dog intakes through May 2nd to emergency situations only, according to city officials. Those emergency situations will be defined as dogs which are severely injured, ill, or in danger themselves, or pose a danger to the community. Midland Animal Services closed on April 13th after announcing an increase in symptomatic animals of showing signs of an illness. The City of Midland reported Tuesday that the facility will operate during normal business hours, but dog intakes would be paused until April 25th. Anyone surrendering a dog will need to schedule an appointment and wait until normal intake resumes or try other avenues such as a nonprofit animal welfare organization. To set an appointment, call 432-685-7420. Hours of operation are 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Tuesday through Friday and 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday. The shelter is located at 1200 North Fairgrounds Road. City, Main Street intersection to close. The intersection of North Main Street and East Michigan Avenue will be closed starting on Monday, according to the City of Midland. Utility improvements will take place that will require the city to detour traffic through the following streets: Louisiana Avenue, Lorraine Street, Tennessee Avenue, and Baird Street, according to the city. Local business and residential access will be maintained at all times from either side of the closure. Trinity Trial. Cross-exam continues for second day by Ben Schaefer. The cross-examination of a young female student at Trinity School of Midland who claimed school administrators failed to report her abuse continued Thursday afternoon. The four administrators, Shelby Hammer, Todd Fries, Crystal Myers, and Adrienne Clifton, have been charged with professional failure to make required child abuse report intentional conceal. Afternoon session. Defense attorneys for the administrators first questioned the female student about the specifics of the inappropriate touching incidents that began in September 2020. They showed the courtroom a graphic of the female reproductive system. They asked the young lady to identify where the male student who touched her placed his hands when he did so. The female student said the male never technically touched her genitals but came very close. Defense attorneys stated that this was a case of indecency and not sexual assault, and they attempted to delineate between sexual contact and indecency. There was also discussion surrounding the young female student's family. The female student's brother, who attended Trinity, was not well behaved at the school and received lots of discipline, according to comments made during the trial. Defense attorneys claimed this fueled the family to hold a grudge against the four administrators being prosecuted. According to the defense, the female student spoke to other staff members and administrators at the school about the situation, and they were not being prosecuted along with their colleagues. The prosecution questioned claims made by the defense that the female student was out to garner attention for herself by coming forward with the allegations. The female student said the only attention she has received has been negative, including insulting text messages and personal interactions in the community. Before the court recessed, attorneys briefly questioned Jonathan McCowan, who's in digital forensics with the Midland Police Department. He took over the investigation of school computers and devices that belonged to the charged administrators. The court went into recess until Friday morning. Morning session. Defense attorney Frank Sellers picked up where he left off Wednesday, cross-examining the young female who came forward, saying she was sexually assaulted by the same male student while she attended Trinity. The defense played a recording of the female student's interview with the Child Advocacy Center from February 22nd of last year. The female student described the male student touching her inappropriately during a Spanish and gym class. The female student said she went to a different male student and described the situation. This male student went to Trinity's Dean of Students, Freeze, and recounted what he had been told. Freeze called in the young female the day after he had been told, according to testimony. After speaking with Freeze, the female student said she spoke with Trinity's head of middle school, Crystal Myers. The female student said that she never spoke to the head of school, Hammer. During the cross-examination, the female student said the Trinity administrators didn't act further because of a gag order that was in place. This prompted Sellers to ask for the jury to be excused, and the defense attorney moved for a mistrial. It was denied. The female student said she did not tell those close to her or go into detail with her family and friends because, as a 12-year-old at the time, she was confused and scared by the situation. She said the male student who was touching her inappropriately was well-liked, and she thought she would be viewed as a little cheerleader who lies a lot, the female student said in her interview with the Child Advocacy Center. The defense wondered why the male and female student continued to be paired together for projects in Spanish class because the inappropriate touching happened at their desk, in which they sat directly next to each other. The female student said she had told her Spanish teacher that she didn't want to work with the male student anymore, but she never described why, and the Spanish teacher did not know what was happening. Inertia, Health, and Wellness Grows by Ben Schaefer. Dr. Stephanie Osolowski, the owner of Inertia Health and Wellness, said she and her staff are motivated each day to serve others and help their clients feel better. Osolowski grew up as a dancer and owned a dance school for 15 years on the East Coast. Dance took a toll on Osolowski physically, and she began attending physical therapy for knee pain. When her physical therapist cured her of chronic knee pain, she became inspired to help others the way others had helped her. Osolowski moved to West Texas with her husband Kent, who got a job at the Kent Companies 2 years ago. She started Inertia Pelvic Physiotherapy when she first arrived. About a year ago, Osolowski set out to hire another physical therapist to expand her physiotherapy practice, like massage and stretch therapy. Inertia began with one full-time staff member and now has a team of 9. Recently, they hired a sports physical therapist. Osolowski admitted she never envisioned herself in West Texas, and the move was a big change, but it gave her the opportunity to fulfill a life mission, provide health and wellness services to underserved communities. Since it opened, the practice has evolved from the more specific pelvic physiotherapy to a wellness center providing different kinds of massage, stretch, and physical therapy services. Once I started with wellness, everyone's like, "Thank God you brought this here because Midland doesn't have anything like this," she said. Although she didn't imagine making a move to West Texas, Osolowski considers Midland home and noted the welcoming and helpful nature of Midland people and doctors. Clients don't need to be injured to visit Inertia. While physical therapy following an injury or surgery is one service they provide, patients can improve their overall wellness by receiving 30-minute or hour-long stretch and massage sessions. In contrast from other local physical therapists, Inertia doesn't take insurance, but instead only accepts cash. This allows Inertia staff the freedom to do what their patients need, not just the services their insurance will cover. Inertia staff have developed a strong relationship with their patients, according to Osolowski. The understanding of a patient's life, schedule, and livelihood allows Inertia to provide better care to West Texans. Osolowski has recently purchased a physiotherapy location in El Paso. In addition to patients visiting their office, Inertia wants to continue to expand its out-of-office visits. Its staff currently visits ConocoPhillips and Diamondback Energy corporate locations to provide massage and stretch therapy. Really, just helping people feel better is the motivation, Osolowski remarked. Odessa's average gas price is 10 cents less than Midland's, by Stuart Doreen. The tale of two gas price averages again was found in Midland, Odessa. The price in Midland stayed the same compared to last week, $3.38 a gallon, the fifth highest in the state of Texas, and 4 cents above the state average, according to AAA Texas. In Odessa, which is around 18 miles to the west, the price dropped a state leading 8 cents. The result of the weekly decline was Odessa's average moved to $3.28, which is 10 cents below Midland's and 6 cents below the state average. The weekly decrease in Odessa was tied for the largest in the state, AAA Texas reported. TexasGasPrices.com also reported Thursday that while the cheapest price in Midland was $3.09, there were 11 stations in Odessa with prices under $3 a gallon. AAA Texas reported the following averages across the West Texas region: $3.21 in San Angelo, an increase of 1 cent, $3.22 in Lubbock, an increase of 3 cents, $3.29 in Abilene, a decrease of 1 cent, $3.30 in Amarillo, an increase of 8 cents, and $3.58 in El Paso, an increase of 1 cent. The cheapest average among the largest 27 metropolitan areas in Texas was $3.16 in McAllen-Edinburgh Mission. The most expensive average was in El Paso. The state average increased 2 cents to $3.34. The last time the Texas statewide fuel price average was at $3.34 per gallon was September 1, 2022, AAA Texas reported. With recently higher crude oil prices, pump prices are also increasing in many parts of the state. Gas prices are still climbing, with the statewide average now at its highest point in more than 7 months, said AAA Texas spokesperson Daniel Armbruster in the weekly report. More expensive crude oil, the switchover to summer blend fuel, and a busy summer driving season that's just around the corner are putting upward pressure on pump prices. The average in Midland is 40 cents less than 1 year ago. This is Mackie. Today I'll be reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Friday, April 21st, 2023. Study: High Wages Will Continue in Oil Patch, by Mella McEwen. Help-wanted signs are proliferating around the Permian Basin, especially in the region's oil patch. But filling those open positions will come at a price that will test exploration and production budgets, according to a new report issued by Rystad Energy. In its supply chain pricing market update, Rystad writes, wages in the U.S. shale patch are on course to remain elevated until the end of 2024, with average growth for key oil and gas trades set to range between 2.5% and 7.2% this year and next. Strong production growth will spur labor growth, including in the core Permian Basin, where an expected increase in oil and natural gas output of more than 10% will lead to more than 7,000 new jobs, according to Rystad's analysis. In addition to low labor force growth and low unemployment levels, oil and gas operators will also face the headache of competition from the renewables sector and increased retirements, all of which should increase the bargaining power for job seekers. But there is good news on the horizon, according to Sumit Yadav, senior analyst at Rystad. We expect the market conditions, especially wage growth, to be more favorable for operators post-2024, he told the Midland Reporter-Telegram by email. After 2024, he wrote, operator spending levels will have peaked. Production growth is expected to slow, and the impact of the Federal Reserve's stringent monetary policies to tame inflation will become more evident. Operators' spending levels are expected to increase by more than 70% compared to 2020 levels, and most producing basins are expected to register double-digit growth in oil and gas production levels by 2024 compared to 2022 levels. Until those spending levels ease and production slows, operators will have to factor in stagnant labor force growth and low unemployment in their budgets. Yadav cited as an example Eddy County, New Mexico, one of the largest producing counties in the Permian, where the total labor force as of February still trails pre-COVID-19 pandemic levels by more than 7%. He also cited Midland County, where the unemployment rate has continuously declined since the beginning of 2022 and now stands 3% below the national average, making it increasingly difficult for industry players to tap into the local market to fulfill their hiring needs. Midland County wages increased nearly 14% by the third quarter of 2022, the highest across all U.S. counties, he said. The U.S. labor market overall has been at its tightest levels in over 50 years, according to Yadav. But that tightness is even more pronounced in the oil and gas sector, where unemployment in the sector stood at 3% in February before rising in March. To address the sector's labor needs, Yadav said oil and gas companies may increase their adoption of contract workers and expedite their efforts on the automation front and push for operations that can be carried out remotely. Expanding the availability of workers will be a challenge, he noted. He added, better work-life balance is highly desired by workers now, especially after the pandemic, which has brought a fundamental change in the working environment. Additionally, workers also want greater job security, better benefits, and improved safety procedures, he wrote. Other measures oil and gas companies can take include offering apprenticeships with faster upward mobility, opportunities to attract younger workers, tapping the pool of retired workers to the extent possible, targeting transferable skills from other industries, partnering with universities more proactively, and working on brand management to project themselves as more environmentally conscious, he recommended. Obituaries. Aaron T. Flood. It is with heavy hearts that we announce the passing of Aaron T. Flood, 44 years old, of Midland, Texas, who died on April 15, 2023. He was born December 7, 1978, in Midland, Texas, the son of Suzanne Morris Flood and Tommy Flood. Aaron is survived by his mother, Suzanne Morris Flood, and Rebecca Allen, his three loving children, Ella, Emily, and Easton Flood, and many cousins, aunts, and uncles. He is preceded in death by his father, Tommy Flood. He will be deeply missed by his friends, family, and all who knew him. Mary Williams Moore, July 29, 1936 to April 15, 2023. Mary Williams Moore passed away April 15, 2023 in Midland, Texas after a long illness. She was born July 29, 1936 in Spring City, Tennessee to James Harrison Knight and Jesse Elmina McCabe. She was preceded in death by her husband of 47 years, parents, stepdad, and brother Charlie Knight. She is survived by her four children, Jerry and Lupe Moore, Don and Ellen Moore, Kathy and Daniel Castaneda, Jesse Moore, sister May O'Dear, and grandkids Donnie Moore, Ben and Jill Moore, Beth and Colton Durham, Rachel Moore, and 9 great-grandkids. Pallbearers are Ben Moore, Donnie Moore, Colton Durham, Terry Swallows, Chris Lujan, and Kason Moore. The Moore family would like to thank Hospice and Cimarron Place for all their love and care. A visitation from Mary will be held Thursday, April 20th, 2023, from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home. A funeral service will be held Friday, April 21st, 2023, at 2 p.m. followed by burial at Rest Haven Memorial Park. A reception will be held at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home following the graveside service. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at www.ellisfunerals.com for the Moore family.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, April 15th. Occidental's direct air capture plant taking shape in Ector County. The story was written by Melanie McEwen. Approximately 130 crew members are buzzing around the site of Occidental Petroleum and 1.5's direct air capture plant, approximately an hour's drive west of Odessa, near the Winkler County line. The 130, who are constructing the roads to the plant and leveling the site to ensure the foundation for the 65-acre plant will be laid correctly, and spraying the ground to keep dirt down, are just a fraction of the estimated 1,000 that will build the world's largest of its kind. Caution signs warn that temporary high lines are in place to power the construction. Christine Irvin with Oxy Low Carbon Ventures, who is serving as construction lead for the project, estimated 13 miles of road is being built to the site off Highway 302, and some county roads are being upgraded at the same time. Completion and commissioning of the plant is expected in late 2024, and the site is expected to go commercial in early 2025. Once up and running, the plant will employ up to 75. Irvin noted that, in addition, support jobs will be created, from the taco trucks that serve the workers' breakfast and lunch to equipment vendors. Michael Avery, president of the Occidental subsidiary 1.5, said the plant, the first of up to 70 that could be deployed worldwide in the next decade, is a logical extension of the company's 50-year history managing and utilizing carbon dioxide for enhanced oil recovery. Initially, the plant is expected to capture up to 500,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide per year, with the ability to scale up to 1 million metric tons per year. In a telephone interview with the Reporter-Telegram, Avery referred to Occidental's goal of net-zero greenhouse gas emissions before 2040 and the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change's report that methods exist now to reduce emissions and adapt to human-caused climate change. Quote, when you look at the target we put out and how the IPCC put it, what is increasingly becoming apparent is we must remove CO2 and, in addition, remove CO2 from the source. Being able to do so at scale is important, he said. Situating the first plant in the Permian Basin alongside Occidental's existing infrastructure not only provides the company with CO2 for use in its enhanced oil recovery activities, helping the company produce low-carbon or zero-carbon oil, but the capacity to sequester CO2 and the Permian's wealth of geologic formations. The DAC technology is not a replacement for mitigation, but can play a critical piece, Avery said, and is needed to not only help Occidental meet its net zero goals, but other companies to decarbonize as well. Occidental partnered with Carbon Engineering, a climate solutions company, because the company's direct air capture of CO2 could be done at scale. That will also help lower costs, Avery noted. Quote, the DAC is an ecosystem being set up. We need to develop the technology to be commercially feasible and deploy at scale, Avery said. The world needs to believe this is a viable solution, end quote. Policy incentives contained in the Inflation Reduction Act and the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act have helped accelerate the project, unlocking funding and providing support for the revenue side, said Avery. Quote, they helped de-risk the financial model and let us move faster, he said. He acknowledged that there are other companies emerging with their own direct air capture technology, something he called encouraging because it's important good technology be developed. Intelligent Wellhead Solutions opens Midland facility. The story was written by Miller McEwen. Surging Permian Basin oil and gas production has prompted at least one company to establish a base of operations in the region. Intelligent Wellhead Systems of Houston has opened a new facility in Midland at 5100 West County Road 126 near Antelope Trail to support its suite of digital control technologies for well completion operations. Quote, as we assessed customer activity in the region, it became clear that maintaining a quick turnaround facility in the center of the Permian was necessary, said Steve Sinclair Smith, chief operating officer, in a press release. Continuing the quote, we can now inspect, service, and outfit our equipment fleet, along with providing upgrades to our equipment, followed by the ability to then send it directly back into the field for use. This location makes it possible for our field teams to quickly travel to the well site when short notice support is required. As a result, we help keep customer operations moving forward, leading to more uptime while increasing quality and efficiency on the well site, end quote. The Midland facility will serve as IWS's regional training center, containing a comprehensive well site simulation system to train the local IWS team, and customers can learn how to operate the company's InVision technology platform. Ryan Huebner, marketing manager for the company, told the Reporter-Telegram by email, IWS is currently recruiting field technicians and a health, safety, and environment officer. Quote, we hope for the continued growth of our Midland workforce. We hope for our presence in the Permian to continue to grow and for our workforce to match the demand, Huebner wrote. IWS has been active in the Permian Basin for the last 2 years and is already working with major operators throughout the region. Huebner explained that IWS supplies digital control technologies that improve well installation and operations through its proprietary InVision technology. Quote, we have the only vendor-flexible, digital, and hardware safety solutions in a variety of packages, allowing our customers to crawl, walk, run, he wrote. The process starts with a design of service meeting between IWS and the customer's operations team to document standard operating procedures in the field and then determine differences with office procedures. IWS then digitizes the wellhead configurations and operating procedures, giving customers a digital twin of the completion process that allows their field personnel to install and operate the digital twin before rigging up on location. Quote, once we rig up, we crawl, implement and clarify standard operating procedures to real-life operations with the basic valve management system, according to Huebner. Customers can stay in this phase or move to subsequent systems, he wrote. Quote, our walk system enhances digital standard operating procedures with the enhanced valve management system, and then we run, implement the most efficient operations execution of the customer's standard operating procedures. Our digital valve controls reduce the risk of human error, preventing inadvertent valve closures or openings during the completion process, end quote. Huebner said IWS is conducting research and development into new technologies to provide safer, more efficient completions. Liberty Oil Field launches alternative fuel unit. The story was written by Miller McEwen. Producing energy requires energy to power the equipment that drills or brings up crude and natural gas. But the sources of that power are being scrutinized alongside the companies that utilize them. For years, quote, the industry has been fueled by diesel, Ron Gusick, president of Liberty Oilfield Services, told the Reporter-Telegram in a telephone interview. Continuing with the quote, the next generation was dual-fuel fleets, and the latest iteration is equipment 100% powered by natural gas, either to generate electricity or directly driving the pumps with gas engines, end quote. His company has just launched Liberty Power Innovations, or LPI, an integrated alternative fuel and power solutions provider for remote applications. In announcing LPI, the company also announced the acquisition of Siren Energy, a Permian-focused integrated natural gas compression and compressed natural gas delivery business. Quote, a reliable fuel source is a critical part of the transition, and Siren is a component of this as a supply of natural gas to fleets and to help our customers transition to natural gas, he said. We've hired a team to help build that transition, and they will help speed our transition. They've done a great job growing the company into a premier provider of CNG and have a great Permian Basin footprint, end quote. Siren brings to Liberty 16 MMCF per day of natural gas compression capacity at two expandable Permian sites and transportation, logistics, and pressure reduction services. Siren currently delivers fuel to customers in both drilling and completions, and its logistics system is designed to deliver CNG, renewable natural gas, or hydrogen to remote locations. Gusick said the Permian Basin is Liberty's largest basin for its fracturing, wireline, and sand services, and LPI will provide a steady supply of fuel to its fleets, quote, particularly as we move to natural gas, end quote. He noted that the company typically moves 100,000 truckloads of sand a year, so, quote, we're good at logistics. We bring that expertise to our fracturing, wireline, and sand units. We can also provide natural gas to other operators, drillers, and frack fleets, and eventually outside oil and gas, end quote. There are two main drivers of the shift from diesel and dual fuel to natural gas, according to Gusick. One is economics. Diesel has gotten quite expensive amid the run-up in oil prices, so turning to natural gas has its benefits, he said. Quote, at the widest point, the savings are $20 million for a single frack fleet, he said. Second is the focus on ESG, environment, social, and governance, that has become an important part of the world, he said. As Permian Basin producers move to produce lower carbon or zero carbon oil and natural gas, he said turning to natural gas is a good step. Part of what's evolving is mobile power generation, he said. Liberty's suite of digit technologies utilize natural gas to remotely generate electricity and power next-generation digit fleet services. The trailer-mounted digifrac fleets have 2.5 megawatt capability, he said. He sees these mobile fleets in service outside the oil industry with their ability to plug into the power grid using natural gas. That could help power, for example, hospitals and first responders when the grid is down, such as in hurricanes or tornadoes. Liberty's first electric fleet is already in the field, working in the Permian Basin, with the next two fleets following later this quarter, or early in the third quarter. Quote, we've laid out a steady plan to upgrade the vast majority of our fleet in the next 5 to 7 years, Cusick said. It will take a few years to get done, but they'll eventually be converted, end quote. There could be infrastructure beyond standard natural gas, he said. That infrastructure could handle more renewable natural gas, and moving hydrogen is a possibility. He noted the trailer used to move CNG would be the same one to move hydrogen. Quote, there are possibilities as sources evolve, he said. We stay abreast of technology and what our customers need. It's moving very quickly. We began using dual-fuel fleets a decade ago and saw modest growth. Ultimately, it started to pick up around 2019 or so, and since we've come out of COVID, there's been real interest in the transition to natural gas, end quote. ESG Dynamics questions methane emissions report. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Reducing, if not outright eliminating, methane emissions is a challenge the oil and gas industry is rapidly embracing. But in doing so, questions are being raised about just how to calculate emissions and which calculations are correct. An example is a recent report by Bloomberg regarding the amount of methane emissions reductions some producers would have to undertake to avoid the methane intensity tax included in last year's Inflation Reduction Act legislation due to take effect next year. The report drew the attention of ESG Dynamics, which issued a rebuttal saying its own internal analytics of Bloomberg's results showed overestimation of emissions by the producers mentioned in the report. ESG Dynamics, an ESG solutions and technology company focused on the oil and gas industry, said Chesapeake Energy and Continental Resources actually reported emissions below the excess emissions threshold and, like Pioneer Natural Resources and EQT Corporation, should need no further reductions to meet the threshold. While the company agreed with Bloomberg that ConocoPhillips, Total Energies, Occidental, and ExxonMobil all had some work to do to reduce emissions, the report overestimated the cuts needed by anywhere from 28% to 188%. ESG Dynamics largely agreed with Bloomberg on estimates for Endeavor Energy, Diversified Energy, Pioneer, and EQT. Quote, emissions controls and performance is a case of the haves and have-nots, Grant Schwartzwelder, president of OTA Environmental Solutions and co-manager of ESG Dynamics, told a reported Telegram by email. Quote, the majors are taking the lead in emissions reduction and have a significant impact on lowering total emission volumes. They are under the highest pressure due to their size, visibility, and public company status. The independents have the challenge of understanding the changing rules and absorbing the costs without the support of in-house regulatory and technology experts. Accordingly, you will see a divergence between the larger and smaller companies, he continued. The Environmental Protection Agency and other regulatory entities are definitely catching the attention of the operators, Schwartzwelder wrote, citing Matador Productions' $6.2 million fine and mitigation costs for 239 well pads in New Mexico. That, he wrote, sends a signal to many operators that they have to take the regulations seriously. Ultimately, these fines have the desired effect from the regulatory entities as operators are spending money and time on emissions controls. As a result, the emissions volumes are dropping. Quote, the challenge is how the lower producing wells can withstand the cost associated with controlling emissions. Push too hard on these wells, and you will force them to be shut in and or plugged, losing the associated reserves forever and not being efficient with the recovery of this resource, end quote. Despite uncertainty over how emissions are calculated, there's no doubt both methane and flaring trends are moving in the right direction, Ed Longenecker, president of the Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association, told the Reported Telegram by email. Those improvements are thanks to a concerted effort by U.S. oil and natural gas companies to reduce emissions through innovation, collaboration, and ongoing investments in greenhouse gas mitigating technologies throughout the value chain. These results are especially notable given the significant increase in domestic production over the past decade, led by Texas operators and the Permian Basin, he wrote. He pointed to the World Bank's 2023 Global Gas Flaring Tracker report as illustrating that ongoing commitment. The report found global gas flaring fell roughly 3% in 2022, the lowest level since 2010, while at the same time, global oil production rose from 77 million barrels a day in 2021 to 80 million barrels a day in 2022. While the World Bank said a majority of the decline came from the United States, Mexico, and Nigeria, it highlighted the U.S. for its large share of global gas flaring reductions. The report said in just 1 year, U.S. gas flaring decreased 9% and flaring intensity dropped from 2.1 meters of gas flared per barrel to 1.8 meters of gas flared per barrel, a 14% reduction, while U.S. oil production rose almost 6% during that year's time. Quote, "This is noteworthy considering the key role of the United States, particularly producers in the Permian Basin, are playing to ensure Europe meets its energy demand by increasing LNG and oil exports following the global unrest spurred by Russia's invasion of Ukraine," Longenecker wrote in discussing the report. Quote, "The fact is, the U.S. energy industry has stepped up to meet this demand while simultaneously addressing demand at home," end quote.
Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading a business column from the Odessa American, published Saturday, April 15th, 2023, from the Odessa American. The Economist by M. Ray Perryman. The outlook for the Texas economy. It goes without saying, there's a lot going on in the economy these days. The United States, and most of the rest of the world, is dealing with high, though moderating, inflation, rising interest rates, struggling industries and markets, geopolitical tensions, and a host of other uncertainties. Nonetheless, I remain optimistic regarding the potential for growth, although the path will probably not be as smooth as we would hope. For Texas, recent performance has been strong. Over the past year, ending in February, which is the latest data available, the state gained 604,800 net new jobs. That's an annual employment growth rate of 4.59%, significantly higher than the corresponding U.S. rate of 2.91%. The professional and business services segment is leading the way in terms of the numbers of new jobs, and all major industry groups saw job gains in Texas over the period. In addition to this momentum, the state continues to attract more corporate locations, expansions, and investments than any other by a huge margin. The ongoing capital commitments and future opportunities are substantial. We're also seeing an influx of people, including many highly skilled professionals. Things are beginning to slow to some extent, but positive expansion is anticipated. Though the state's industrial base is far more diverse than in decades past, it helps that oil and natural gas development and production has been on an upswing of record proportions. Uncertainty regarding global economic performance and thus demand for fuels is a dampening factor for price levels, but China's reopening and OPEC's surprise production cuts are a useful counterweight. It appears as if trending will continue in a profitable range going forward. Over the next 5 years, we are anticipating, projecting, that Texas economic output, real gross product, will expand at a 3.49% annual pace, with mining, oil and gas, playing a dominant role. We're also forecasting a gain of about 1.3 million net new jobs through 2027, an increase of 1.83% per year. The largest sources of employment growth are projected to be the professional and business services industry group, as well as health care and social assistance. Texas obviously cannot fully escape the current challenges, with the state providing $1 of every $6 in U.S. exports. The performance of the international economy can't help, but notably affect overall performance. Similarly, Texas firms and consumers must also face essentially the same inflationary pressures and higher borrowing rates as those in other areas. Despite these risks, Texas is well positioned to deal with what comes and emerge with momentum. The state's multifaceted industrial mix and enormous natural resource endowments will help to defuse the worst of any downturn that may come our way. Stay safe. Emre Perryman is the head of the Perryman Group and serves as a distinguished professor at the International Institute for Advanced Studies. Midland Reporter Telegram, Business and Oil Page, Thursday, April 20th, 2023. Oil falls as slowdown ignites demand fears, by Julia Fanzeres and Sri Taylor, Bloomberg. Oil fell as the latest economic report revealed the slowdown effects of monetary tightening and pushed demand concerns to the market's forefront. West Texas Intermediate fell the most in a month to slip below $80 after being pressured by a rising dollar and dampened risk appetite throughout the session. An economic survey from the Federal Reserve late Wednesday showed the U.S. economy stalled in recent weeks, with hiring and inflation slowing and access to credit narrowing. While the report likely reinforces the chances that the Federal Reserve will ease its policy of interest rate hikes, the demand implications are unsettling the crude market. A report showing that the U.S. drew from the nation's oil reserves failed to quell worries. The market is laser-focused on product demand, and this report will not ease concerns that demand is fragile, said Rebecca Babin, a senior energy trader at CIBC Private Wealth, referring to Energy Information Administration data. These numbers were not bad, but they were not good enough to keep traders sleeping well at night. Nationwide, inventories declined 4.6 million barrels last week. Total demand rose, but not really where it matters, said Emily Ashford, executive director of Energy Research, noting that gasoline demand fell and diesel consumption was effectively flat. Despite the pullback, crude is still up from a 15-month low reached in mid-March following turmoil in the banking sector. A surprise announcement by OPEC Plus on production cuts and curbed Iraqi flows pushed oil back into the $80 range. The producers group is looking to force consumers to take oil out of storage and shore up prices and amid tentative demand growth. Bull run on OPEC Plus cuts gives way to fresh demand jitters, by Alex Longley, Sharon Cho, and Durvika Krishna Kumar, Bloomberg. OPEC's output cut bombshell at the start of April spurred a rush for oil, but caution is now the watchword as traders gauge whether demand will be strong enough to sustain purchases. The alliance's plan to curb production by as much as 1.7 million barrels a day initially triggered a buying binge in Asia and the North Sea, with importers seeking to get ahead of the cuts that start in May. That's helped eat away at the European supply overhang caused by French refinery strikes, even lifting U.S. grades off recent lows. High selling prices for Middle East crude and weakness in Asia's gasoline and diesel markets are hammering refinery profits, however, making them less likely to keep snapping up barrels. Some are even threatening to cut processing rates, though there's no sign yet of that coming to fruition. After the OPEC Plus cut, crude oil prices went up and margins crashed, said Parsley Ong, head of Asia Energy and Chemicals Research at J.P. Morgan Chase & Company. Demand concerns have been rising, and we expect refining margins to be lower than last year. The upshot is that oil traders are wrestling with a quandary that has troubled them for much of this year. Will consumption rise enough in the coming months to make a dent in inventories that are more than 100 million barrels higher than a year ago? Or will recessionary forces continue to menace demand, stopping prices from moving higher? Nowhere is the dilemma more stark than in the Middle East crude market. Last week, traders snapped up a slew of cargoes from the UAE's Upper Zakum to Qatar's Al Shaheen. This week, however, buying has slowed, and the value of Abu Dhabi's Murban oil has slumped. That's in part due to a drop in gasoline and diesel prices. To be sure, while margins are pressured in Asia, other parts of the world are faring better. Low inventories in the U.S. are keeping gasoline markets there and in Europe relatively robust, underscoring the optimism among bulls for a tighter summer. Much like physical supplies, the initial rally and key spreads in the futures market have also dissipated, even with fresh bullish drivers, including supply disruptions to Kurdish and Nigerian oil exports. In the U.S., ongoing releases from government oil reserves are poised to keep the domestic market well supplied. The nearest U.S. crude futures spread is in a bearish contango structure ahead of expiry later this week. Both Brent and Middle Eastern Dubai benchmark have given up some of their post-OPEC plus gains in recent days, with initial optimism cooling. It all leaves traders looking, hopefully, for signs of an improvement in demand. Near-term upside is more limited until tight fundamentals start to replace macro fears as the driver of prices, said Livia Gagliardi, a senior analyst at Energy Aspects.
This is Business in Oil. Diesel fuel that powers the global economy flashes recession signs. Bloomberg News. Signs of an economic slowdown are flashing in the global diesel market. In China, the number of trucks running on highways is noticeably down in recent weeks. In Europe, diesel's premium to crude futures recently plunged to the lowest level in more than a year. In the U.S., demand is on track to contract 2% in 2023, S&P Global Inc. says, excluding 2020, when much of the economy briefly came to a standstill. That 2% slump would be the biggest drop in America's diesel use since 2016. We are assuming one of the worst economic climates in recent memory outside of the 2008-2009 financial crisis and the pandemic, said Debnil Chowdhury, S&P's head of America's fuels and refining. No matter how you crunch it, demand for the heavy machinery fuel that powers everything from commercial trucking fleets to construction equipment is weakening in many of the world's largest economies, viewed as an early signal of weaker industrial activity and reduced consumer spending. The pullback has recession watchers on high alert. Diesel demand can act as a leading indicator for broader growth as an early sign that spending by household is waning, said Ben Ayers, a senior economist in the U.S. with Nationwide Economics. An expected drop in diesel demand fits the building recession risks across the economy. Once the world's hottest fuel after Russia's invasion of Ukraine disrupted trade flows, diesel prices have been coming down amid concerns many of the world's biggest economies have bumpy roads ahead. Economists say there's a 65% chance of a U.S. recession and a 49% chance of a European one within the next year. In China, the risk is lower, but the country's recovery from its formerly harsh COVID-19 restrictions will still require a marked improvement in consumer confidence and fast. Much of the pullback in diesel demand can be tied to trucking, which consumes about 60% of diesel in China and more than 70% in the U.S. The number of trucks running on Chinese highways fell 8% in the week ended April 9th, according to data tracked by China's Ministry of Transport. Commercial diesel stockpiles nationwide, excluding state refineries, ballooned to an 8-month high in early April, according to OilChem data. The demand drop comes after China's manufacturing activity eased unexpectedly in March, according to a private survey, leading a slide in factory gauges across Asia. Emerging markets in the region, including Indonesia, where the government have started cutting subsidies for fuel, are also seeing demand weaken as growth slows, said Daphne Ho, senior analyst at Wood Mackenzie. Similar trends are playing out in other parts of the world. European demand has been soft through winter on muted heating demand, and macro headwinds are clouding the demand outlook, said Cohen Wessels, senior oil products analyst at Energy Aspects LTD. In the U.S., trucking and therefore diesel consumption has been hit by a decline in factory output, home construction, and retailers working off high inventories, said Bob Costello, chief economist at Industry Group American Trucking Associations. By one measure from supply chain intelligence firm Freight Waves, March trucking volume hit the lowest seasonal levels in 5 years. At the root of the U.S. trucking slowdown is a shift in consumer spending patterns. The steady stream of internet orders to fend off pandemic boredom has given way to vacations and experiences. As inflation squeezes household budgets, the first thing people stop buying are what's known in the trucking industry as high-volume shippers or cheap consumer packaged goods like sodas. Anytime we see consumers stretched because of inflation, that impacts the cheaper goods that tend to move in large volumes, said Craig Fuller, CEO of Freight Waves. Individual decisions like skipping soda add up to a macro impact that reduces the overall volume of goods that move through the economy. The drop in U.S. diesel demand will be especially pronounced on the West Coast, where massive tech sector layoffs and unfolding banking crisis have put the region under financial stress. There, diesel demand will slump 5% this year, more than twice the national average, said S&P's Chowdhury. U.S. container imports, a bellwether of diesel use from the trucks and trains that move them around the country, are also under pressure.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.